RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. We are at RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, rpglpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out online at rpglessonslearned.com. Welcome to RPG Lessons Learned. I'm Dusty, and with me as usual is Tanner. Hey, Tanner.
Hey, Dusty. How's it been?
You know, I can't complain. Again, my gaming life is fuller than it's been in a long time. I've played with Martin in the game that he runs for me and his brother, and then also you and I, after a fairly long break through the spring season, have done just a little bit of gaming recently.
Yeah, that's true. I've been running for my home group as well, on and off. Me and you have caught up and played some stuff recently, and then you've run something for some guests as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, I ran the St. Patrick's Day dungeon that we talked about in a previous episode. I ran that dungeon for a friend of mine and his two daughters and my daughter. We were meant to run that the day after St. Patrick's Day, but due to an illness, we had to punt it back a few weeks, but... yes, absolutely. I ran that, and that was a great time.
Speaking of which, this episode is kind of about catching up on Hex Dungeons and where we've been with them. A lot of these are kind of pointed towards me because I've been running several. But if you want to chime in about your sort of revisit of them, too, I'd be interested to hear about that.
Sure, I'd be delighted to. But first, why don't we remind everyone what a Hex Dungeon is?
Yeah, so this isn't the idea that you came up with because we wanted... to do the experience of old school gaming and dungeon crawling and mapping without having to worry about how big a room is. So, Dusty, you had the great idea of abstracting rooms to fit on a hex grid, like we were doing a hex crawl, like an outdoor adventure. And you write down how the different hexes are connected and you write features for the hex, but the setting is smaller. It's a dungeon instead of like a large outdoor environment or region.
And how have you been incorporating those into your campaign? You've been playing Hex Dungeons not only for old school, but in your 5e campaign, right?
Yeah, that's true. So I believe all the Hex Dungeons I ran were between like fifth or around like fifth level for the characters. So it's not like they were like super overpowered and could like walk through walls and fly around and stuff quite yet. But yeah, I've been incorporating them as missions. So basically the structure of this campaign as it's wrapping up now are that like they're trying to reclaim the throne of a foreign kingdom. And the heir to that kingdom has missions to recruit people that they go on. So I basically say, hey, you know, if you want to ally yourselves with the cult of Arachne, the spider worshiping drow, they require you to do this thing. And my players say, okay, what do we want to do this session? So I'll roll into the session with like three or four dungeons completed and like ready to run. And then my players the day of choose which one they want to do. And they go on that mission.
So still 14 rooms, still the same layout that we originally piloted together, or are you shaking it up at all?
Yeah, I have found, and my group has found, that 14 rooms, me and you kind of talked about this, you stumbled across, I think, the perfect size when you were making this, right?
Yeah, totally accidentally. 14 rooms, like I played with some different hex layouts, and I got one that was like, this feels like it would allow for a lot of branching. You can come into it from any direction. It has enough rooms that it's a fairly lengthy session, but not so many rooms that it's three or four sessions. So it was just pure dumb luck that I happened across 14.
Yeah, so I've been handing my players actually a blank hex map with boxes that have room for them to take notes about what's in each hex and everything. And I've asked my players, I'm like, is it weird? Like, are you... kind of like getting tired of like this 14, like is that too formulaic? And my players are like, no, this is perfect. Anything smaller and it would feel like there weren't really many choices to make, and anything larger is kind of too much for what we'd want to tackle in one session, which for us is like three to four hours. So you know, with a little preamble, some combats in there. You know, obviously 5e combats can kind of take a little bit longer than old school games. And yeah, it ends up being pretty much the sweet spot for us and our tastes.
So your players haven't found it restrictive at all?
No, not at all. I think that they probably wouldn't want to do one every session, but they have said, like, hey, if we're doing a dungeon that you made, like, we have no problem with this being the format for them, which I you know, I'm extremely flattered by that, and I'm super impressed that you kind of stumbled upon this format.
I don't know how. I was watching that dungeon, watching the documentary Blackmore, and they were talking about the fun of mapping, and I was like, you know, I've never mapped. I've never done the graph paper thing. It seemed too difficult. The one time we tried to do it, we abandoned it immediately, and the GM just started drawing the map for us. Like, it was just so difficult to talk about, okay, how big is this room? 10 by 20? Okay. No, not this direction, the other direction. Oh, okay. Oh, it was right. Over. It's over one because the hallway was the wall was 5 feet. Oh, I didn't understand. Like, there's just so many logistics in that. That, yeah, it's dumb luck that came to me literally at the beach watching Blackmore. Speaking of the format, have you put any fun twists on the format as you've been? How many, actually, stop, let me ask, how many of these have you run now?
I believe I've written and run 3 additional ones since we've played. I've sent you 2. I can't remember what the third one was, but the themes of the dungeon. One of them was called the Slime Tunnels, and it took place underneath this great willow tree in the middle of the swamp where this lady of slime was turning people into slime skeletons and stuff. You know, just classic slime stuff. Slime-themed dungeon. You can't be mad about that. And then the other one I read ran and wrote was called The Dream Web of Arachne. And the setting for that one was actually like an extra dimensional purgatory for Arachne. So the setting was on a giant web, essentially. And they would go to different parts of the web and different chambers and stuff like that.
So in total, you've written 4 or 5?
Probably 4, I think. Yeah. So the format, I have mixed it up a little bit. So what I do is I have like a little, I'll say I'm going to be sharing a lot of this stuff on my itch page. So if this sounds interesting, click the link in the description that Dusty will kindly put in there. And you could take a look at what I'm talking about, but just sort of to describe my layout for the Hex Dungeon, I have a little map on the top right. I have the name of the dungeon, and I have 3 really important things for me at the table. Number 1 are, what's the random encounter rate? And I've kind of defaulted on like a 2 in 6 chance every 20 minutes of real time play. That seems good to me. Lights and environment, just to kind of remind myself of like, what is the actual setting of this dungeon? And then like sounds and smells to sort of have like go-to on hand descriptions. And then I have all 14 hexes described, and that's the first page. And then on the back, I have a section for like monsters that I put in the dungeon, random encounter table. So I try to write like a custom random encounter table for each dungeon to varying success, and then like treasures and valuables and stuff that they can find in the dungeon on there.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've moved away from the minimalist format of my earliest text dungeons to like writing out, you know, modules with box text for the holiday dungeons that I'm writing. But it's funny, you've written 4. I, at this point, have finished St. Patrick's, Christmas, the Frankenstein Castle, the murder mystery one that I did that was really just an adaptation of the Veiled Society. I think we're tied, man.
Yeah, yeah. And it's super evocative. I mean, it's so easy. Like, once you realize that I have 14 things to figure out, 14 ideas, and I have like, I even have a table in my template that I don't even think I shared this with you, but it's a table of 2d10, and it's a list of 10 things that every room in a dungeon should have. And I took this from the writer of an upcoming game called His Majesty the Worm. I follow him on Twitter, and he put this thing in it, and it's kind of taken from his ideas, but the idea is that each room in this dungeon should have 2 of these things, and it's a big list, and it's like something to fight, something to run from, something valuable, a trap, a reason to come back here, a puzzle, a reason to rest, a reason to do this. And so if I can't think of something to put in a room, I'll just roll on that table, and I'll be like, okay, this dungeon has a reason to return and something surprising in it. So I'm like, something surprised me. I'm like, oh, that could be a trap or an ambush and a reason to return. Maybe there's an item in this room that helps in another room in the dungeon or something like that. So like, that's sort of my brainstorming when it comes to like populating the actual rooms.
So of the four you've written, tell me about your, like, my weakest is certainly the Frankenstein's Castle that I did the first time. It was just thematically all over the place. What's your weakest of the four hex dungeons that you've written so far, do you think?
The one that I would go back and touch up the most would be the slime tunnels. I really liked a lot of the writing I did in that. Like, I think it's evocative. There's gross stuff in there. But as far as like a contiguous space, it makes the least sense, I think. With the dream web, I can at least say, okay, this is like an extra dimensional purgatory that there's reasons for lots of things to end up here. You know, like one of the things that I have in the dream web is a dwarven stone spaceship that crashed from the astral sea in there. I'm like, oh, cool, I can do that. The slime tunnels, I'm like, it's a slime dungeon, you know, and I kind of worked from there as opposed to like kind of starting with an idea of like what it was in the lore, you know what I mean? Like, I do think that like dungeons, obviously they're fantastical, but I do think that like as a space, they need to kind of make conceptual sense of like, what was this, you know? So that's how you get like classic things like Castle Greyhawk. It's literally the dungeons underneath the castle, or like temples and stuff like that kind of makes sense. I didn't really start with that from the slime tunnels. And so like, if you're just dropped in an alien space, it can kind of make exploration not feel super meaningful. You know what I mean?
Did your players respond differently? Like, did they feel that at all? I find players often overlook what we GMs perceive as those kind of flaws, thematic flaws.
I had to remind them at several points, like what, like where it was they were, like that they were underneath this giant tree and there's these tunnels of slime and there's a villain that's in there and like what they're doing. And so like, I mean, they were having fun moment to moment, but I think like it lacked a sort of higher connective tissue. If that makes sense.
That makes sense.
It was more of a fun house than a place. And like, obviously fun houses are fun, right? It's in the name. But like, if I had to rewrite that one from the start, I would make it that it was something else before it was the slime tunnels.
So I think my strongest hex dungeon isn't really even my dungeon. It's my adaptation of the Veiled Society, where I turned that module into a hex dungeon. I think that was so much fun. Of all my hex dungeons, it's the one that I would be most eager to rerun for a lot of different groups. Tell me more about your strongest.
Yeah, so my strongest was the most recent one I've run, and I don't think that's a coincidence. I had practice, and that was the Dream Web of Arachne, the one I had kind of mentioned before. I think it was the strongest because their goal wasn't to go in there and vanquish a villain. It was to find four objects scattered around the dungeon, kind of like we did with Temple of a Thousand Swords, if you remember us playing that. And there was the big bad, quote unquote, was an almost unkillable monster that would stalk them around. And so I thought that was a really good kind of setup. And then it actually led them into making some really interesting decisions, because basically one of the only ways that you can get the item, an item that you need from the dungeon to complete it, quote unquote, is to basically doom a bunch of drow that have come here as like paradise, as their heaven. You have to doom them to oblivion, to not existing anymore. And like my players like grappled with like a moral thing in a dungeon. Like, who would have thought, you know what I mean? Like, so maybe I was just a little bit more on fire. Maybe my players were engaging a little bit more with like the drow spider theme kind of stuff. But like, I think that one, I had a player say like that was like one of the best dungeons I've ever played in. Can't get a better compliment than that.
That's the best case for OSR. Like, for a GM, it's so much easier to put together, you know, a geographically boxed in dungeon than it is to put together a completely open-ended campaign. So it's easy to prepare, and then you still have those tough moral choices. And the moral choices almost come from the player's motivations rather than from anything you put in the dungeon. Things that you think might be easy choices are more difficult for the player, and they imbue the dungeon with that drama.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because a lot of OSR games don't really assume that your character has a motivation besides like getting treasure and stuff, you know, which is fine. Like lots of fun can be had there. But because this was like a continuous 5e campaign that we were level 5 or 6 going into it, my players, I mean, I have really, really good players, and they had like their characters had prejudices and wants and needs. And one of them was a drow coming into this dungeon. And so she was like, is there any way we can like not do this? Like, is there a way around this? And I'm like, you know what? This is the situation in front of you. You guys can react to it how you will. So, yeah, I think that this might be an obvious lesson, but like as the GM, you're really only setting the scene, you know, you're designing the set. You're not writing the script. Right. So like once the players get involved, if you have really good players, they will elevate that to the next level and take what you made and make it even better.
And I think Hex Dungeons really drive that home. Like you only get as the GM, you only get to do the location.
Mm-hmm.
Have you discovered any limitations to Hex Dungeons as you've run them on your own for your players?
Yeah, so the space, the abstraction of the space is an abstraction, right? And it's a double-edged sword in regards to that. So like in a classic dungeon, you can have like in your Blackmoor style dungeons, room shapes can matter to make combat more interesting, you know, like there could be like an elevated side to one room with a pit of spikes and torches on the walls here, and here, and like a really detailed dungeon map can set the scene for like a really interesting dynamic encounter. But because we're taking this higher level of abstraction and each room or even region of rooms is its own hex, like once a fight does break out, I have to sit and say, okay, how am I going to make this an interesting battlefield, you know? And like that's something I have to improvise. So like maybe I should make some tools for myself to be able to do that a little bit faster, but like that is a limitation, that an abstraction is an abstraction, right?
I don't know if you watch Dungeon Craft on YouTube, Professor Dungeon Master, but he has this thing he calls UDT, the Ultimate Dungeon Terrain, and it's essentially a Lazy Susan. When I say Lazy Susan, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like a platform, like a circular platform that can spin around, right?
Yeah, it's a turntable for passing things at a table. Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom famously had a Lazy Susan like built into the table. Anyway, it's a Lazy Susan, and he's got a map on top of it, or like a grid, I should say, carved into foam core. And then he just sets that up with a few prop pieces of miniature display. And that's the room you're in. And I've toyed with the idea of, you know, the two concepts of the Hex Dungeon and the UDT, Dungeon Craft's Ultimate Dungeon Terrain. Those two things combined, like when a fight breaks out, you plop the Lazy Susan on the table, you throw a few pieces of scenery to kind of like set the decorations. It's minimalist, but it gets the idea across. You could have your torches, you could have your statues, you could have whatever. And now all the monsters and players exist in a physical space. That would be an interesting kind of amalgam. But so far, I've avoided that. I think I just happen to prefer theater of the mind combat. But I agree, tactical combat is absolutely a limitation of a Hex Dungeon.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, 5e D&D's assumption that you're doing tactical combat all the time, like maybe that's maybe a mismatch for like this concept if I really had to like pick on it, you know. But luckily I have inured my players to so many story games like Powered by the Apocalypse stuff in the past. I will often, like when I'm getting set up for a combat, I have like one of those Chessex like rewritable mats, you know, the wet erase mats, and I'll hand my players markers. I'm gonna be like, I have to look like three things up. You guys, this is like a throne room, and I want you guys to draw it. And my players will just like draw it, and I'll like put some cover in there, put some obstacles in there, you know.
That's really cool.
Yeah, my players will do that. So I can't make that recommendation for every group, obviously, but it works. It works for us, and I'm hoping that if I had to do that over and over again, that it wouldn't feel boring or strenuous.
I'm massively into that idea. Tell me, do you think Hex Dungeons are a tool for a new GM, an experienced GM, or does it matter?
That's a really great question. I am an experienced GM. I don't want to toot my own horn, but I've been doing it for most of my life at this point. I don't know how I could explain the merits of this concept to anybody who isn't familiar with hex crawls and mapping and random encounters and that kind of thing. You know, like I really feel like this is an intermediate sort of level. I think a new GM probably will have, there's plenty of like 5-room dungeons online that you can find, right? And I think a new GM has so much to worry about that simplifying and having a very straightforward, like, this is the physical space, you know, this room is representing in the game. I think that would be better for them. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that we didn't arrive on to this idea until kind of later in our GMing careers, right?
I think you're right, which bums me out because I'm writing that holiday dungeon to be like, hey, never run a dungeon before. Here's an easy way to do it. But I think you're right. It's only easy if you already really know what you're doing. And that bums me out because now I wonder if the concept of my entire holiday dungeon thing is flawed.
No, I don't think so. I think it requires like a page of you, Dusty, talking to the GM, explaining the concept of it. And a traditional dungeon map really doesn't need that explanation, you know? Like the idea of a dungeon map is so, like people who are like new GMs who are interested in D&D have the idea of like dungeon tiles and terrain and minis in their mind already. I think you just need to like write a blurb explaining what the hell this is, and I think that that's just an extra step that classic dungeon crawling doesn't need.
You're so right, though. The 5-room dungeon is the best place for a beginner to start, even though I wish it was hex dungeons. Anyway,
man, we like these hex dungeons a lot. I mean, should we like put an ad in the paper or buy a billboard like explaining these,
get the word out?
Yeah, I mean, like, what do we do with this?
I don't feel any ownership of the concept. You kindly keep saying that you came up with, referring to me having the initial idea. But I don't feel like I have any ownership over the idea. I mean, certainly many people have done small dungeons. Certainly people have done different abstract layouts. You and I have both seen many blog postings about a flowchart dungeon.
Yep.
This really just takes a flowchart dungeon and puts it on a hex grid. So I feel no ownership of this. I feel in no way that I should monetize this or care about, you know, any proprietary sense about it. So I would love to put it out. The holiday dungeons I'm going to put out for free, you know, one day when I finish them. and if you beat me to the, like, you've already put out the Ruined Asylum of Ulgrith.
I have, yep.
And I would have looked at your PDFs that you've sent. They're gorgeous, what you've pulled together for your hex dungeons. Like, dude, beat me to the punch, put these out there, get them out in the world. And if there are 100,000 hex dungeons out in the world by you and others who hear this or see them or run with the concept before I get my holiday dungeon out, I will not care.
Yeah, I would love to see. I'm so fascinated at how this has evolved just between you and me. Can you imagine in a dream world where 500 people are writing these? Like, think of what people could do with them.
Yeah, and feeling proprietary about it just seems silly too, because the whole point of it, like you say, imagine thousands of people. The whole point of it is it's meant to be really easy to make your own dungeon.
Exactly.
That's the entire point. Mm-hmm. If I wanted something super proprietary, I'd make it, you know, nigh impossible to make your own, but incredibly easy to run.
Right.
But we've made it the opposite. We've made it, you know, super easy to make your own, but you have to have some GM skill to be able to run it. So it's the opposite of something you can monetize. But yeah, I would love to see it evolve beyond you and me, to your point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think all the best ideas in RPGs and all the best resources are open source. You know, this is a great DIY. I mean, it's a DIY community, right? It's about people taking ideas and remixing them. And that's all we've done, is taking ideas that other people have had and remixing it into something that we feel is pretty novel. And yeah, people should remix it. Like I said, if you're an intermediate GM, I recommend trying this. I'm going to have a template on my itch page, and Dusty's going to link that in the description. So I'm going to put them all out there with Creative Commons 0 or whatever that is, where you can freely, you know, hack it, mix it, cut it, paste it, whatever you want to do to it.
So back to the concept of the show, lessons learned. We don't actually have lessons learned in the show notes. So we've had some show notes that are largely questions, but lessons learned are about to be completely on the fly. Consider yourselves warned, home audience. Here, I'll lead off with one. I think you said it something earlier about your players would be disappointed if every session was a hex dungeon. I think a great point is, as excited as you and I are about this, it's not one size fits all. It's not the solution to every problem. It's another nice tool to have in your tool belt. So a lesson learned is, who's the editor that said murder your darlings? Like,
yeah.
Love the things that you come up with, but don't feel like they have to be used in every single situation. Hex dungeons are a specific tool for a specific job. That's a key lesson for me.
Yep, absolutely. I feel like half of our lessons learned at this point are about like tools and having the tool in your tool belt for the job. Second lesson learned, I'm going to say you will get better at things the more you do them. You know, my first hex dungeon is one of my roughest. My latest is one of my most successful. And if I were to keep doing this, I think in 10 months, I would have even better ones. You know what I mean? So just because a template is a template doesn't mean that you can't improve on it and tweak it and learn from it and make it better as you go.
Can we squeeze out a third lesson learned? I think limitations lead to the best creativity. Like that's been a lesson learned we talked about over and over and over again. And I think as a GM, limiting yourself to 14 rooms makes prep approachable, because if you're prepping something open-ended, where do you stop prepping?
Exactly. But
if you're prepping 14 rooms, you stop at 14.
Yep. And 14 rooms for me with prep was like perfect, like two sittings of prep. Like I had enough creative juices for like seven rooms and I would get up and I'd do something else, come back the next night, finish it. And it was perfect. So yeah, set limits for yourself. Set boundaries, and limitations exist for a reason. And all of everybody's best work has been on a canvas that everyone thought was a little bit too small.
Cool. I really hope you listening at home check out Tanner's Hex Dungeons. Tanner, you have my permission from this moment forward, and you didn't need it, but you can stop referring to me as the creator of Hex Dungeons. Just put them out there and don't worry about crediting me. It's such a simple concept. I'd be surprised if I did invent it. I haven't found anyone else yet online who did, but it has to have been out there in the zeitgeist. Dude, run with it. Quit talking about me in relation to Hex Dungeons. It's just a thing that you and I do.
Yeah, all my close family and friends tell me to stop talking about you so much anyway, so I'll try to do that.
Oh, same. We should talk about that one day. All right. In all seriousness, thank you for listening.
People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.